Encuentros Latinx presents Queer Survival in Tennessee.
Hello, hello, dear audience. Welcome to Encuentros Latinx, where we are so excited to have you join us today. We have a special guest that I would love to introduce. But first and foremost, let me go ahead and introduce myself. My name is Reverend RJ Robles. My gender pronouns are he, they, or ella in Spanish. And this is live from Nashville, Tennessee, where I'm regionally located today during this time together. And so welcome, welcome, welcome. Everyone who is listening to us and watching us. I would love to also present our guest speaker for today, who is Jay Lopez. Jay, tell me a little bit more about yourself. Where do you come from? Who are your people? Yeah, let's go for it.
Hi, everyone. Thank you for having me here in this podcast. I was born in Mexico, so I'm very proud to say that I'm Latino, now living in the USA, and my people, of course, are my Latino community. I get really engaged with them, and I get really excited living in this country when I run into, you know, our community and, you know, other events. And I've been in the U.S. over 20 years now. I grew up in Mexico, and then my parents decided to immigrate to the United States when I was 17. So I have been in two worlds, let's say, half of my life in Mexico, half of my life here in the U.S.
Beautiful. And so what are some of the identities that make you up as a person? What identities do you claim as yours?
Yes, let me start with my pronouns. My pronouns are he, his, him. And so, yeah, so since I was a little, I always knew that I was different. You know, the society, especially in Mexico, I was born in a very small town and it's very religious. I was raised to be to go to Catholic church. And so that stopped me from being myself a lot of times. And when I was a kid, I was afraid to say that I was gay. That word did not exist in my dictionary. And so, of course, there were other horrible words that they will people would bully and would tell me, you know, joto, maricón, mano quebrada, and other ones that are really bad and offensive to us. I discovered here in the U.S. that I was more than a gay person. I adopted the term queer. Because if you say that you're queer, you have more elements to be yourself. And it's not only just one specific title. And for me, being queer, it gets me closer to all the rest of the LGBTQ plus community. Because, I mean, we all have similarities as far as what we like and all the talent that we have and all the background. So, yeah, I consider myself a queer person.
Thank you for sharing that, right? And what queer means to you. Tell us a little bit more about how does being queer and Latino, specifically someone who migrated, how do those identities intersect and show up for you?
Okay, yeah. So when I was in Mexico, like I said, being raised Catholic and having all the machista, population, because I'm from Jalisco. So if you're from Jalisco, you will remember the mariachi, the charros. So, you know, it's very homey as far as like, you need to know how to ride a horse and you need to do all these manly things. So that affected me a lot because of course my mannerisms were different. And so people were like, you're so gay, which, I mean, I went through so many phases in my life where I was depressed. And so those were the downsides of it, because even though I tried to fake it so many years, like going to school, going to church, trying to hang out with friends. All of the guys, they didn't want to hang out with me. They were just picking on me. On the contrary, with the women were always my friends. They were always protecting me. And so that would make the guys really jealous of me because they would be like, well, the women are with you, the girls that I like, you know, they listen to you. They don't listen to me. So I became to be the girl's best friend. And so I guess instead of staying on the negative of it, I took advantage of it. And so the men will always come to me to get advices, you know, hey, how do I hit on this girl? Why do I give this girl that I like? And all of that. And you had to always, you know, think of ways to continue with your life and see what works for you. And so, I mean, I'm 40 years old right now, so it's a lot of knowledge. But in the beginning, I was very, very afraid to be outspoken. I would always send my sister, like in school, if there was a project or things like that, I will not speak. I was so afraid to speak in front of a big audience, you know, always thinking in my mind, like, no, they're not going to like me. They're not going to accept me. And so when I was in high school, I always wanted to be an actor. And every time I was writing things of the things that you wish, I'm sure that maybe you had like a diary or something or your projection board, I will always write, I want to be listened. And then I would write a verse or a song, and always those, that phrase will stick on every single note. I want to be listened. And so my grandfather, he knew that I was different and that I was gay, and he was always pushing me to be a better person, to not be afraid. So when I finished high school, I told my dad that I wanted to be an actor. And so living in a small town, he was like, well, I don't think there's a school for that or a university. So we needed to. I needed to move to a bigger city, and my dad was like, "And there's also no money." So he was like, "What if we go to the U.S. and maybe we can work hard and stay there for 2 years, and then we can come back to Mexico, and then you can go to university and pay for your classes." And I was like, "Okay, well, that's a good idea." Of course, the language, you know. That was a big barrier as well, because in Mexico, I did not know English. And as a matter of fact, I failed English class. Because in my mind, I was like, I don't think I'll ever need to know another language. But here I am. So when we migrated to the United States, we came to Tennessee, and I found out that there was also not an acting school here. And so I was like, well, I need to find a way. And then I moved to Miami. And when I moved to Miami, I started taking acting classes. And that really helped me to become the person that I am now, because it gave me all the tools to be in front of the camera, to be able to speak and, you know, express myself through art. And so adding to what we were talking as far as the obstacles as well, even though I was raised Catholic, going to church will give me the safe space that I needed when I was like very down and depressed. Like, I remember going to church, crying to God, asking Him for answers. But I also felt safe there because I was able to cry without a guy or a boy or someone male, you know, judging me. Or telling me like, no, men don't cry.
Thank you. Thank you so much. Wow, that was so powerful, right? To hear more about your experiences in Mexico and also in the U.S., particularly what it means for you to live at the intersections of being queer and Latino, and how family plays a huge role into those experiences early on, right? And the messages that you were receiving around masculinity or even around sexuality or gender. Let's stay on this topic for a little bit. Speaking of the church, how does faith and spirituality, how has it shown up in your life? right? So we're hearing a little bit about the Catholic Church and how in some ways it was a safe space or safer space for you to let go and be able to cry and to be in deep, deep prayer and conversation with God. And I'm just curious about how has that maybe changed or shifted or transformed over the years? How have you like expanded your spirituality or your relationship with the divine? How has that kind of come and gone in your life?
It definitely has changed a lot the way I see religious and the way I believe on my faith. Like, I do believe in God. I do believe in do the good thing, be kind to each other. And I do understand that there are consequences if you treat wrong other people. Right now, I don't go to any church denomination at the moment because I haven't had the time to explore. I know that here in Tennessee, there are so many options that are still growing up for us. I remember my sister one time took me to a Christian place and she's like, oh, I love this church. You should go with me. They have live bands and I see a lot of gay people that go there. I see a lot of gay couples. And then I was like, well, let me give it a try. So I went with my sister and the pastor was a woman. And they started doing the ceremony, and then she was speaking on us. She was saying, you shouldn't like same gender person and all of that. And I just look at other people that I knew that were gay, and I was like, I don't belong here. Like, they're criticizing me. Like, they're saying that they're welcoming and everything, but then when they're doing the speech, they're pretty much like saying that I'm the person that has a problem and I'm the person that needs to change when it has to be different. So I was like, no, I'm not going back here. I'm not a two-face. And so I need to be at a place where people will accept me and would not judge me once I turn my back on them. But there's hope. There's still hope. And like I say, I know that there are other places that even have the flag that, you know, represent our community. And then they accept us all. I am happily married to my husband. And he also was raised Catholic. And so we were both baptized. We did the first communion and all of that. And then I still go to church, like say, if there's a quinceañera in my family or if there's a wedding. I mean, I don't have anything against that. But also the good thing about us growing up and speaking about all these. In my family, I'm not the only person that is part of the LGBT community. I had two uncles that they live in Mexico. And so that really helped that my parents and the rest of my family will take it okay with me. In my family, I'm the only person that has been married to, you know, someone from the same sex. My two uncles are not married. But my grandma, one time, there was a ceremony because we do my grand dad anniversary. How do you say when he passed away? It's anniversary, right? Or
they? Yeah, anniversary. Yeah,
anniversary. Okay, so these
death anniversary.
Okay, death anniversary. Okay, so one time I went to Mexico to his death anniversary, and again the father was saying things against us. And I remember I stood up and I was like, well, I'm not going to be here. And then my uncle saw me too. So later, days later, they had a conversation with my grandmother. And so my grandmother spoke with the father and she said, you're not welcome to my house no more because they are part of my family. And if your sermon is not going to be welcoming and inclusive, then I need to find another priest. So we've been trying to make the changes in my family, and not only for us, I mean, for everyone else. But definitely having faith helps a lot because there are moments that you're going to be very depressed and you're going to need the strength. And so when you have faith, you know, you pray and I do believe in praying as well and a lot of people can change. And if we need to make changes on the minds of the majority, then we have to continue pushing for leaders that are more open mind. And I think that's it. I mean, I don't have anything against any religion, but a lot of the leaders are the problem, in my opinion, because they were taught from a book that has been so old and that was written when we were not accepted, that all of those things need to be written again. And they need to, you know, like I say, have all the inclusion. So that way the new generations grow up with those beliefs instead of the ones from the past that kept so many of us outside of all of these regulations.
Wow, that's deep. That's deep, right? To hear that just the role, the way that you've been able to navigate the church and kind of in and out while at the same time, like, not being afraid to take pauses from it, to take breaks, to not go at all, as you said, to also go whenever you are invited or whenever there is an opportunity to go. And I'm curious around your practices, right? Your daily or weekly or monthly, like, rituals or practices. What do you do nowadays to kind of ground you in hope and in faith? What types of, you know, some people might call these spiritual practices, but whatever you refer to them as, would you mind sharing, like, how, what specific practices you lean on as a queer and Latino person?
Yes, well, every morning I pray. So, you know, my first thing I do is, you know, once I wake up, I'm always praying and thanking God, you know, for a new day, for, you know, new opportunities. I do that also, you know, before I go to bed. And so, like I say, even though I'm not active going to a building or church, I still do it all the time. And so with my parents are still active in the Catholic side. So they go to church every Sunday and they do have the meetings with, like, all the couples and all of that. And so I also try to teach that to my sobrinos, nephews. Yeah. To my nephews. Sorry. Sometimes I had to think twice. Because English is my second language. So to pass it on still and telling that, you know, be good, believe in God, because, you know, if you don't, then, you know, you're going to make more mistakes than normal. And so always, but I also give my siblings, like nephews and nieces, we also give in the freedom to think for themselves, because there's also one thing about being Latinos and living in the U.S. and you have multicultural families now, because we're not only Mexicans no more. In my family, one of my sisters married a guy from Guatemala. So my mom was mad when my sister was going to marry this guy because he was raised Christian. So my sister was raised Catholic. So now they have a mix as far as faith, because they didn't have a church celebration. It was only, you know, when you sign the papers. And so my mom was always disappointed, like, no, you should find a guy, you know, that follows your same beliefs. But with me, she changed. I mean, she was different. And I was like, well, you know, Catholic Church would not accept us yet. And she was okay with it. So there's a lot of also growing with my pillars, with my, you know, family. And it's, you know, we just have to continue pushing and trying harder.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. It's interesting, right, that sometimes there's space as you were saying, for the multiplicity of diversity within our communities, right? Because Latino, that includes so many countries, that includes so many lineages and histories of people in Latin America and the Caribbean. That includes, you know, a lot of folk who are maybe different than folks that we may have grown up with, especially in our particular families and our particular lineages. And so I definitely hear you say that, like, and thank you for sharing, right, the way that there's a mixture nowadays within families of origin, and also how that mix, that mezcla of raza, that mixture of different folk from different countries, even within the Latino, Latina, Latinx experience, or the experience of Latinidad, can be so different, even if it is shared here in the United States, right?
I just wanted to ask something, because, I mean, we had to be willing to learn from others, because also living in Tennessee, you know that Tennessee is the state that has the most refugees and immigrants. And so in my family, we also had this mix of status, meaning like some of us, you know, we went through the process of getting our papers and become resident aliens and then citizens. And also like I have another sister that she married her husband, and he still has DACA. So the more you are willing to learn about everyone else, the more you're learning about what they believe, or let's say, okay, well, they're not going to say me because I'm gay. Well, I'm sure that there's something that this person and you like the same. And you can always start with that instead of like having pushbacks and be like, oh no, I don't understand you. Sometimes people say that and I'm like, well, you don't need to understand me. Just respect me and then I can do the rest. If you let me, you know, hang out with you, and you, if you let me, you know, get to know each other, then you're going to, you know, learn a lot of things. I mean, you and I, and of course, our amazing Latinx community and LGBT community, we are daughter, son, and, you know, if someone stabs us, we are going to bleed. And so we are humans, and that's something that people still don't understand.
Yeah, definitely, right? And specifically how, because, you know, on this thread of we are daughters and sons and siblings and aunties and uncles and tios and tias and all the different ways that we have of relating to each other and our families, whether that's our blood family, our biological family, or our chosen families, right? There's so many different terms and different ways of relating to each other. And I'm curious to know, you know, on this particular note, we've been talking a lot about being queer and Latino and those different experiences that you have had being born in Mexico, being raised there, and then migrating to the United States and living here in Tennessee. I want to kind of dive into some more sharing with our people. What does it mean to be queer and Latino and living in a state like Tennessee?
Well, right now it's dangerous. You know. with the people that are leaders, I don't know if I can say names, but you know, our governor, let's just start with our governor. He right. is very conservative. And so the lawmakers are trying to make so many laws against us. Remember that they tried to pass the law that drug was a crime. Hopefully it did not pass. But it doesn't mean that it cannot come back. I mean, they can always rewrite it, because the reason that it did not pass is because it will make so many confusion with the population. But then, you know, I'm so glad that it didn't happen, because as being queer, let's say I wanted to do makeup on my eyes or somewhere in my face, they will consider me a drag, and then, you know, we will get in trouble. So, but being a queer in Tennessee right now, I say that we live in a survival era. I try to stay connected with, of course, my community. And sadly, and I need to say this because this is how I feel, sadly, not many people of the Latinx community get engaged politically. And I understand that some of our community are maybe undocumented and they get afraid to go to race or to go to the downtown and, you know, be part of all of these movements because of that. But we need to do it, because if sometimes we are demanding for things, then we need to show up. And so that's the thing that we need right now. We need more of our community to show up and come together, because other people are fighting for us. And so this is a team job, you know, all of us need to do it. And also we need to protect each other as well. I'm in several groups on Facebook of, you know, there's like gay connection, you know, gay Latinos and so many other. And so one time, one of the members posted that they overheard a group of guys saying that they were going to go to a certain place and beat up people that they look gay. And so these are the things that we need to tell our representatives, like, hey, you're making all these laws and, you know, you're making us to look bad and, you know, and for other people. And so it's definitely proud to say that we're still here, but definitely we need to continue fighting. And like I said, sharing information as well, resources. I was part of the movement of inclusion before inclusion existed. And I think I met you when there was another organization that I was called Out Central. If I don't remember, we met through Out Central. Yes. And that tiny place next to Canvas will give resources to the community. And so we were the people that were Latinos there trying to do so many things. And so after Nashville Pride became so popular, they were like, we need to do something. So Nashville Pride and their members decided to do a survey, because they ran an app. I don't know how many years ago, 5-6 years ago, before COVID, they ran an app where you were able to see the program and everything for Nashville Pride. And so because of that, they got so many emails from all of us. So after having a lot of information, they decided to create meetings where people will have these meetings for like an hour or two, and they will do a questionnaire asking you, what do you think we need as, you know, LGBT community in Tennessee? And so...
Yes, this was when they were doing Nashville Pride and a couple other LGBT organizations here in Nashville and across Tennessee were doing like a needs assessment for the community. Yeah.
So they broke it into three things: the political side, the medical part, which is very important in Tennessee, especially because a lot of trans community are here. And so I don't remember the third part, but so that's how inclusion got created. So now we have a platform and a nonprofit organization for that. And of course, as far as the medical, there are other organizations that are together, like Nashville Cares, My Clinic, and so many others. So like I said, it's so sad to go into these meetings and knowing that it's only 5 or 6 of us Latinos, and then the rest are, you know, other, of course, community, of course, African-Americans and other people. So every time I see inclusion doing things, I try to do a video and do a short. Of course, with social media, you have to be more brief because people get bored. And I try to translate it in Spanish so that way people know this is happening. So I did that with the law, as far as, you know, some of the ones that were against trans people, especially with denying them here in Tennessee to have medical care.
Yeah.
I got a lot of pushbacks when I did the video. And this is the thing that hurts me the most, because I did the video in Spanish. And so a lot of the comments were focusing not even on trans people. They were thinking about the drag ban. And they were saying, like, con los niños no se metan. You can do whatever. Con los niños no se metan. And I was like, isn't trans people also human? Aren't they humans? And aren't they also kids? I mean,
right.
If you have the resources when you're growing up, then you can go to a psychiatric and they can help you with the process. Mm-hmm. Because if you don't, then you're not going to get the okay to get all the changes that you need, you know? And the only thing is, whenever I see negative comments, I don't engage. I just move on, because if I do, then, you know, we're not going to move forward.
Let's talk about this for a minute, right? Like, in the state of Tennessee, especially right now, 2023, this has been the year, not only in the state of Tennessee, but across the United States, where there have been at least over 450 anti-LGBTQ laws, bills, legislation that continues to be passed or has been passed. And in Tennessee, as you hinted at, right, there's the ban on gender-affirming care for youth. There's talks already about a potential ban for all gender-affirming care, including adults, coming down the pipeline next year in 2024. There's been the attacks on trans people through the Attorney General requesting access and having now copies of transgender individuals' medical records, complete medical records that has private information, healthcare information. There's now also the attack on abortion that continues to happen, right, and reproductive rights. And now I think that the state and the governor and the attorney general is also trying to get their hands on records for people who are leaving the state or gone out of the state to seek an abortion. And so all these things are connected to LGBTQ issues. They are connected to trans issues. They are connected to queer issues. And when with such a state of hate and such a state of, we live in a red state, we live in a blue city known as Nashville, the capital, and yet there are still hate crimes, and yet there are still things, hyper-surveillance that happens. What do you think, right? If you had to give like a state of the movement right now in Tennessee, because I know you're also very involved in community. You're very involved in reporting to the people what's going on, when is it happening, where it took place, and you're also very involved in that educational piece as well. And so, share with our people and our audience on this podcast a little bit more about, you know, how, I guess, like, from your perspective, how specifically did, as a member of the community, for example, let's just go with one, the anti-drag bill, how did that particularly impact you as a queer and Latino person?
It impacted me directly, because last year I was doing a lot of events for our community, because I'm a performer myself. So I was working on doing these events for the Latino community where I was able to perform for them. But I was always looking for places that would give us the safe space to do it, like on a weekend, so that way we can have events where there's DJs, and of course, people 18 and up can go, and of course, 21 and up, they can drink. So it did affect me because I was in the process of becoming a drag king, trying to do my songs and my music and all of that. And then that happened. And then, you know, with my group of friends that they do drag, we were like, okay, what are we going to do? I always, you know, I'm looking for these venues. And it's a lot, like you say, a lot of education about like, this is how many of us we are in Nashville. This is what we can provide. A lot of owners that have a venue, whether it's a restaurant or a club, they're always afraid that, oh, you guys are going to cause fighting, you know, people fighting, or you guys are not going to consume. And let's be real. We are the community that spends the more money on everything because we grew up being so competitive to each other and we're always competing against the community. So it's like, no, it's the opposite. You know, if you accept us, then we're going to bring more people. And so your business is going to do better. And so having this drag van and all of these business owners were like, oh, no, I don't want any trouble. I mean, we were doing a drag show at a restaurant. And so, like I say, I'm always keeping contact with organizations. So when the drag van was still in effect, I contacted Chris Sanders from TEP, which is Tennessee Equality Project. And I was like, Chris, because I heard that they canceled Borough Pride, which is in Morpher's Borough. And I was like, that's shocking. And I told him, like, I'm trying to do a drag show at a restaurant. What should I do? And because I had to call him because other people were doing a drag show on a Sunday, like Sunday brunch, near the stadium. And they had people outside. And so they had to call security and all of that. And I was like, I don't want that to happen to us. Especially because, I mean, the business owner was like, oh, my God, what did I sign that for? So he was like, okay, this is what you guys can do. I mean, it's not approved yet, but to avoid anything, just make sure that there's no children involved. Like, you cannot accept anyone under 18 for any reason. And if you're going to do a drag show, make sure, like, if people are walking outside, that they cannot see through the glasses when you guys are performing. So we did it that way, but we had to cancel so many others because we were like, let's just not risk it, let's just wait. So, you know, we felt like we were like retrocediendo, going backwards, instead of, you know, making improvement and going forward.
Wow, I mean, likewise, you know, it's the struggle is real and it's a shared struggle. And that is that has been part of, you know, so just getting to hear more about these are real people's lives, like, right? Like, there are queer, Latino, Latina, Latinx people here in Tennessee, in Nashville, in Murfreesboro, in Chattanooga, in Clarksville, in Memphis, all these cities across Tennessee and small rural places as well, rural towns of Tennessee, where our lives are being impacted and our lives are being changed. And we, as you said, we will continue to fight, we will continue to organize, we will continue to educate, we will continue to agitate and take it to the streets if we have to, right? As we've seen so many protests in Tennessee, especially here in Davidson County, in Nashville, in the Capitol, to fight against all these anti-LGBT legislation. This has also been a moment in Tennessee where we are fighting against gun violence and we are fighting for gun reform. Yeah. And so there's just so much that always happens. But specifically where I know that you and I are both deeply, deeply rooted and committed to the struggle and in community to raise the issues that particularly impact us as LGBTQ Latinx people. And so with that in mind, I want to kind of shift us over to communities. Speaking of communities, for you, where do you feel you're involved in so many different like ways, right? Hosting, MC, reporter, activist, I would say, a leader, educator. And in what communities do you feel your highest and fullest self?
Definitely with my Latino community, because, I mean, we speak the same language. I remember when I was working for TURC, Tennessee Immigrants and Refugees Rights Coalition, you know Leticia Alvarez, you know Leticia. I was there going to the consulate, the Mexican consulate, when, you know, they were doing mobile and they would come to Nashville and get people to do their passports and all of that. And so I had to speak with them about their rights, you know, during Trump administration. There were a lot of raids. I mean, we were part of the biggest one in Morristown, where they took over 100 employees. So being with my Latino community, I feel safe and I feel that I'm able to express myself. And of course, with women, better than with men. In my LGBT community, of course, I do feel good as well and safe going to our places that we normally hang out. But there are some areas where me and my husband try not to go as much, you know, because you see who live there. And I'm very surprised that Franklin, which is Williamson County, is making so many changes. I mean, they had their second or third pride this year. There's a lot of gay couples living in Franklin, because this is the thing. We are going to move because we also have the right to have family and have kids. And a lot of couples that are same sex are living in Williamson County because Williamson County has the best rating as far as education. So our people want their children to have the better resources and education. So they're moving to Williamson County, even though it's more expensive to live there. But these couples are also making a difference, because they are the ones that are going to talk during the meetings of the city, you know, at the city hall. And I also feel safe going to events with organizations such as, I don't know if you still are part of Dignidad Obrera. Okay, so Dignidad Obrera, Tennessee Immigrant Refugees Rights Coalition, you know, Tennessee Equality Project, Inclusion, because all of us share the same values. So being around people that share the same values with me, that's where I feel safe.
And thank you so much for, yes, the shared values, and yes, to our people, our gente, our community. And also thank you for uplifting some of the like powerful organizing, community-based organizations here in Tennessee, because they're doing amazing work. And so on that note, tell me, you know, we're going to wrap up shortly, but I want to know if there were any other sort of things that you have learned, either about yourself, about our people, you know, having had that experience of living first in Mexico and now in US and in Tennessee, what have you learned about yourself? You know, maybe there was something surprising, maybe there was things that you let go of or that you had to learn that was very new. What have you learned about being queer and Latino here in the United States?
Okay, so being Latino in the United States, and especially here in Tennessee, And now if you are bilingual, I mean, that will give you more opportunities in Tennessee, because when you're bilingual, they paid you a little bit more. Well, not so much more, but still, you know, that is something that you can add on your resume. And being queer, I mean, people will take you in any job as well, because they know that you're going to be doing great with customer service skills, because we like I said, to express and talk. We always compliment each other. And that's one thing that other, you know, community normally don't do it. I mean, I was born with, my mom always said, like, you had to say hi to everyone, even though if you don't know them. The minute that you walk in somewhere, and if you see people, say hi, because that's to be polite. And so other things like that you achieve throughout the years with your background, it's very important that you continue. And all the things that I have learned in moving from Mexico to United States, there's always resources, there's always help, but you had to do your job as far as, like, let's say you're undocumented and you're a woman and you're pregnant. There are resources for you to get qualified for 10 care once you're pregnant. And so there are so many other things that you can do. But I really ask my community, like, if you're going to ask for help, stick to it and be responsible to follow through. Because I always hear all these complaints about people like, oh, I went to this place and they said they were going to help me, but they didn't do. It's not that we didn't do, because, I mean, I also work at a clinic. And it's not that we didn't do. It's like sometimes you move your address, you change your phone number, you don't provide an email. How are we going to supposed to communicate back to you if we need to? So all of these people applying for insurance, health insurance and other programs, you know, food stamps, WIC, and like I said, 10 care as well for kids that are also born here in the U.S. If you don't follow through, then maybe things are not going to get approved. And a lot of Latino community doesn't get approved because they get a letter that is not in Spanish saying that they were missing documents or information. And then they just never got the letter on the mail, or they just thought that, oh, I did the application, everything is going to come to me. No, you had to, you know, follow through. And also another thing is, like, teach others their ways. Because if you tell them, or if you, like, say, oh, I'll do it for you, then they're always going to depend on you. You need to show the way that it's done so that way they can continue doing it, because otherwise, like I said, you're going to be so much, so busy trying to help the same people. So you need to tell, like, okay, you can be a leader as well. This is what you can do. You know, a lot of people were always asking me, like, hey, I need to make an appointment for the consulate. Can you help me? At some point, I was like, okay, there's so many requests about this. I'm just going to tell them, okay, go to the website, do the appointment yourself. So that way, next time they need to renew, they know how to do it, instead of be like, okay, I'll do it for you. Just give me your information. Like, you had to show people the way to continue with what they need, and definitely follow through to the end. Because if you don't, then things are not going to get done. And so you're not going to get all the benefits that you should be able to. And like I said, now in Tennessee, there's not such a language barrier, because anywhere you go, they're always going to have someone that speaks Spanish at least. And if not, like, if you go to the doctor, they always have the tablets, or, you know, all of these electronic devices that they can have someone interpreting for you. So if you're sick, you have some condition, don't be afraid to make appointments to see the doctors and things like that, because there are always resources. And so, yeah, Tennessee, it's getting better at that. And so, you know, and again, when in doubt, here in Tennessee, always ask for help. That is also one thing that I learned. You always have, and I need to ask for help, and then, you know, you'll find the organizations, the people, everything.
I love it. Thank you so much for that those nuggets and words of wisdom, right? That and expertise and knowledge that you have, and to go back to, we are such a, as a community, as individuals, but also as a collective, we are so resourceful. We are such a resourceful people that it makes sense that folks would look up to you, reach out to you and tell you like, hey, I have this question, I have this need, where can I go? I think a lot of us play that role, especially within our generation and younger generations, where we are showing up for our people in that way by being in the know of, okay, you can go to this place for these types of resources, supports. You can go this over here for these programs, or you can go over here to get involved in the movement of social justice and liberation, right? So that's beautiful. Thank you. Thank you so much for saying that. And also being a guide in the community for people who maybe don't know where to start or don't know, right? Or we have a lot of folks in Tennessee who are newly arriving to Tennessee who don't know, don't maybe don't have family, don't have friends, or if they do, they kind of are don't know where to turn to. And so it's very important information that you just shared. And so I appreciate that, and that you're always willing to share that. And like you said, queer people, we affirm each other. That's such yes. a, like, I'm doing it right now, right? Like affirming you and your work. And I just deeply value you. And yeah, thanks for sharing that. So tell us, I'm going to switch to my very last question. Mm-hmm. Because you do so much and you stay busy, where can folks keep up with you and your work? Do you have social medias that folks can follow? Please share your handle, hashtags. Do you have any websites anywhere where you would like folks to keep up with you and your work? Now's the time to put in the plug selfishly for yourself. Go for it.
Okay, yeah. So definitely social media is the best way to find me. And so you guys can find me on Facebook, Instagram, TikTok, Snapchat, Twitter. I mean, you find me as @SoyJLopez, which is my name. And that's where I normally post everything. And of course, people can send me a message or contact me. My phone number will be there as well, like especially in Facebook or on Instagram. Those are the two that I use the most. I use Facebook a lot for my Latino community. And, you know, Facebook is more for people from certain age. And Instagram is for the younger generation. So you need to be everywhere to, you know, get all the population. And yeah, if I see something important that I need to inform the community, that's where I will post it. But if people have some questions regarding, like I said, medical, even immigration questions and things like that, they can always reach out to me through my social media. And I can always direct him to other nonprofit organizations or, you know, the direct numbers of lawyers or clinics and things like that. And also now, I think we're still doing the voting here in Tennessee. So I want to invite the community that are able to go vote to do it. Because when we select the right leaders, then that's when changes are made. And if we don't go out to vote, then we're just giving the vote to another person that we don't want. If you're not able to vote yet, you know, try to convince the people that can do it for you, because I mean, they need to hear your story as well.
Important. Yes, go out and vote, get the vote out, help. You know, there's voting restrictions are real. Voting gatekeeping is real, especially in a state like Tennessee. So we're seeing this across the U.S. And so, yes, good reminder for folks to get out the vote, help get out the vote, and be a part of those efforts as well. And thank you for sharing your social media handles. Remember, folks, that's @SoyJLopez, okay, put it out there, search for my compa here, and just, wow, thank you. Thank you. Thank you so much for your time. This has been a blessing to just spend time together in this way. Is there anything that you would like to close us off with?
Yes. No, I want to thank you also for the invitation, and thank you, you, and thank you and your entire team for taking the initiative to do this podcast, because with these programs, other people are going to see and hear more about us, how we live in Tennessee, because I'm sure there's going to be listening everywhere. And so that way they can also learn from our state to their state, so that way they don't make the same mistakes. Because I mean, there's always, I would say there's a domino effect. Whatever happened to us, it continues. So let's stop it and let's get better. And so I really, really thank you guys for making this podcast. And of course, I wish you all the best. I wish that you guys are doing this podcast for years. And let me know if you want resources about like who to interview next. You know, I can always pitch it to you guys.
Yes, I'm like, speaking of the domino effect, right? Like, we all know each other. But we know of somebody that knows of somebody that knows of this other somebody. So it's great. It's great. And again, thank you so much for being part of this show, of this podcast. Again, this was Encuentros Latino, Latinx. And we're so, so thankful for Jay Lopez, who was our feature of this time and this show. So we're going to wrap it up. And one last question.
Okay.
Do you have a drag name?
I do. I recently found the right drag name, but I don't want to say it because, you know, I'm afraid that if I say it, people are going to copy it. And then, you know, I think I need to, you know, make it official, like in paper.
Yes.
So that way people don't. But I've been watching Drag Race Mexico, and that's where I heard it. And I was like, okay, that name represents me. So I do have a drag name, but like I say, it's very Latino for sure. But I just don't want to give it away.
Okay. Well, you know, on that note, we're going to encourage the people to watch Drag Race Mexico, see what's popping. And yeah, see what you learn from watching our TV with our people in it and our amazing talent of performers. Thank you again, Jay, for all the work that you do. And this was brought to you by Encuentros Latinx. And we're so, so happy that you've taken the time with us today.
Yeah, thank you, guys. And so one last thing, just don't be afraid to be yourself.
Qué rico, qué bueno. So good, delicious. Yes, do not be afraid to be yourself. Amen. Thank you.
Thank you, guys.
Encuentros Latinx is part of the Gender and Sexualities Justice Ministries of the United Church of Christ and is funded by the Carpenter Foundation. This episode was produced by Taylor Amaj and Yuris Martinez, edited by Storm Miguel Flores, and hosted by RJ Robles. Rena Ramos provided quality assurance and oversight. Visit ucc.org and search for Encuentros Latinx to find our church toolkits on racism, LGBTQ inclusion, and transgender stories. Email Rena Ramos at ramosr@ucc.org to learn about our pastoral coaching program.